The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Gladwell. Now, let's jump into AAA. The first story we have today is last Tuesday, LeBron James became the NBA's all-time leading scorer, surpassing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who held the record for 39 years. So, guys, with LeBron becoming the all-time leading scorer, do you think he's the best scorer in NBA history?
That's obviously hard to argue due to him now having the record for the all-time best scorer, because over the past 39 years, we've always talked about Kareem as one of the best scorers of all time, and he had the most unstoppable move of all time. So that's hard to argue because of the simple stats, but that's also hard to say because LeBron is somebody that throughout his career has had slight weaknesses in his game in different parts of his game throughout his career. So, and there are other players who I think are better overall scorers, but they just haven't scored the most points. So that's a hard argument to have.
I don't think there's an argument anymore. I think, yes, he is the best scorer in the NBA all time. And ultimately, I think this kind of puts the GOAT debate to an end because, for me anyway, him, you know, taking this all-time scoring title, it just pushes it over the edge, over that line, to put him in ahead of Michael Jordan. I know he doesn't have the finals like Jordan has, but ultimately LeBron has been the best scorer in the NBA.
I must disagree with you all there. I think Michael Jordan is far and away a better scorer than LeBron James. I just feel like MJ in these moments just always had it. I just felt like, game on the line, you could always depend on MJ to make a shot. LeBron, not so much. All time, MJ is averaging the most points. He averages 30.1 and compared to LeBron's 27.2. So I kind of think that puts that to the end there. And LeBron has played longer than MJ has with the Michael Jordan having those years off, retiring, and then the Wizards fiasco, whatever he was doing there. What did y'all think about the celebration? They had to stop the game. It just stopped it in the middle of the third quarter. Do y'all think that was warranted?
I guess they kind of made the whole broadcast and the whole game about the LeBron breaking the record. My favorite part about this whole thing was the fact that the Lakers lost this basketball game. It just kind of puts the cherry on top of LeBron getting this record on this game. They get beat by the Thunder on national television.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main things I was excited about being a Thunder fan. We don't get very many national televised games. And of course, that one was not made for us. That was just to celebrate LeBron passing Kareem as the all-time leading scorer. And to steal a game like that where there's all these distractions, of course, the stoppages of play, which I kind of expected. They did the same thing for Curry when he passed Ray Allen with all-time leading threes. But just to come out for that young Thunder team to have that type of focus to continue through all these distractions and have the adversity to go in an away game and win is pretty big for that team.
Yeah, I just feel like if it was Michael Jordan or Kobe, they would have said wait to stop the game, especially with the Lakers losing. I just feel like they have a different mentality than LeBron has. It's kind of just all about LeBron all the time. And with some of these other greats, it was just all about winning. All right, second story we have today. Last Thursday was the NBA trade deadline, and we'd be here all day if I tried to go through all these trades that happened. So I just wanted to break down the most crucial and league-altering trade with the Brooklyn Nets trading Kevin Durant and T.J. Warren to the Phoenix Suns in exchange for Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, 4 unprotected first-round picks, a first-round pick swap, and 2 second-round picks. Who do y'all think won this trade?
Looking in the long-term view, I think the Nets won this trade. I think Kevin Durant and T.J. Warren are both great players, but on the back end of their careers, they get 2 players like Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson on the front of their careers and all these picks, just like you mentioned, Alex. I think the Nets won the trade overall, and in 15 years, we'll look back on it. But the Suns now get a chance to get one of the best players in the NBA and a good role player like T.J. Warren to build this quote unquote finals run that they can make in this next year or two to go after a championship that they've missed. But looking on the long-term aspect, I think it's the Nets.
Yeah, I think one of the main things to look at, the Suns, you know, gave up a pretty sizable package in order to get Kevin Durant there. But I think one of the main things to look at, they didn't have to give up DeAndre Ayton at all, which it sucks losing Mikal Bridges, you know, one of the best 3D players in the league. And Cam Johnson, another great defensive player, and he can really score the ball. And of course, picks and stuff like that. But to have Kevin Durant there, to have T.J. Warren there, to really, you know, boost your title odds. You really look back at, you know, the Suns series in the finals against the Bucks. What could have pushed them over the edge there? And like, if you put Kevin Durant in that situation on the Suns, then I you know, would argue that they win that series and they win their ring.
Yeah, I feel like it's a big gamble on the Suns' part, kind of like with the Mavs and Kyrie Irving last week in that trade. KD and Chris Paul only have a few years left, maybe two for Chris Paul at most. And KD, the way he's getting injured, I don't see him playing more than five. Mm-hmm. And then for the Nets, I feel like it's just another failed superstar experiment. You had the one where they traded all those first-round picks for Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. That did not work out whatsoever. And then with KD, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, they only played 16 games together and didn't win anything. So it feels like the Nets just had another failed experiment there. But they got a great haul, like y'all said, with Mikal Bridges being one of the best players, 3D wing players in the league, and Cam Johnson being very underrated in the role he plays. But those first-round picks are going to be very vital in years to come, especially if the Suns, with KD and Chris Paul, kind of retire and the Suns are going to have to stick with the rebuilding. All right, the third story we have today is the Indianapolis Colts plan to hire Philadelphia Eagles offensive coordinator Shane Steichen to be the team's next head coach. Do you think the Colts made the right choice here?
Absolutely. I think this is a great, great hire. Obviously, it's not as like flashy as some of the hires that we've seen, especially the Sean Payton hire and the D'Amico Ryans hire, the Texans and then the Broncos. But I think this is a great move for Indianapolis, especially if Indianapolis wants to go out and get their quarterback, just like some other teams in the draft or in the draft or in the free agency, because Sketch has really proven that he is a quarterback whisperer. What he did with Jalen Hurts and what he did as a defensive assistant. So I think it's a great hire. I think he's an up and comer at the head coaching position. I think Brian Johnson now has a choice to make if he goes and makes the head coaching jump, whether if he goes back to college, something like that, or if he comes the offensive coordinator of Philadelphia. So there's some more decisions to be made. I think the Indianapolis Colts nailed this one, though.
Yeah, this is an extremely underrated pickup as a head coach. You think about what he's been able to do with the Eagles this year. I mean, he got them to the Super Bowl, won the, you know, most dominant offenses in the league this year. He takes someone like Jalen Hurts and really sharpens his game and turns him into one of the greatest quarterbacks in the league at the moment. I know that, you know, in the past there's been a lot of concerns with if Jalen Hurts was actually that guy to be able to get it done. I think after, you know, especially after this season, he's kind of put all that to rest, and that just goes behind what he's been able to do as a coordinator for Philadelphia.
I think there was a sigh of relief for Colts fans that they didn't hire Jeff Saturday and went with Shane Steichen. I guess Philly and Indy just like to keep trading offensive coordinators, with Philadelphia hiring Nick Sirianni, who was the offensive coordinator in Indy, and then now the Colts hiring Shane Steichen. And then before that, Frank Reich, who was the Eagles offensive coordinator, was hired by Indy. It's just like a whole carousel over there, trading back and forth. But I think Steichen was the best option available. He's really shown, like y'all said, he can develop quarterbacks with Jalen Hurts. It's going to be interesting to see what quarterback they go with in the draft. They trade up to go with Bryce Young or stick where they are and go get C.J. Stroud or someone like Will Levis, or maybe reach somebody like Anthony Richardson, who is eerily similar to Jalen Hurts the way he runs the ball. I think he has more arm strength than Jalen. But it'll be interesting to see what the Colts do in that quarterback position and who Shane Steichen wants in the long run. All right, Gray, I know it was a depressing week for you, but it was better for me and Nathan. So what happened in college basketball this past week?
Yeah, just like you said, 2 games to talk about for each team, for Auburn and Alabama, two completely different results on the two teams. Starting with Alabama, Alabama goes 2-0 this week with two impressive wins over SEC schools, a home win against Florida and then the road win at Auburn. Those are two impressive wins, just moves them to number one in the AP poll for the first time this season. Let's talk about the Florida win. Alabama, another dominating performance, wins 97-69 at home, even though Colin Castleton had a really good performance. Castleton went 29 of 10 for Florida, but Alabama was just too deep and was dominant throughout this game. Brandon Miller had 24 points and 9 rebounds. Mark Sears continued to make the case that he's one of the top, at least scoring guards in the SEC or the country. What did y'all see from Alabama in this one?
Yeah, to start out with, I'm going to go ahead and highlight one player. Rylan Griffin continues to be one of the best freshmen coming off the bench. He's a catalyst to the offense. He comes in, he plays terrific defense, he hustles around the court. And as the season's gone on, we've just seen his offensive game step up, especially in games we've needed him. But looking at this Florida game, Castleton basically did everything he could to, win this for the Gators. He had all the opportunities to score, went to the free throw line 14 times, made 11 of his free throws. So just really a great game to see from him, but his surrounding cast really didn't help him greatly. Florida's bench was awful in this matchup, which really it's that crucial time where both benches are on the floor. One's got to be better than the other, and if your bench doesn't show up, you're not going to put up points and you're not going to win the game. Florida only made 4 threes out of the 14 they took, while Alabama made 15 out of their 34. So you look at the discrepancy there. I mean, 3-pointer is always going to be better than taking a 2, and that obviously shows in the result, 97-69. It really wasn't close in this game. Florida had stretches where they were able to narrow down Alabama's lead, but ultimately, Alabama's death is just too much.
Yeah, like you said, Nathan, I think that 44% from three is just a recipe for success for Alabama. I mean, if you shoot that from the three-point line and you don't win, there's obviously an issue. Brandon Miller, Mark Sears, like y'all said, carried throughout the entire game. Didn't really need the bench to play particularly well, and they really didn't outside of Javon Quinterly. But it feels like every week I bring this up, but another big man dominates Alabama. What can they do to keep this from happening, guys?
Well, as I've said in the past, with the struggles against people like Drew Timmy and Tanner Groves, it just being more physical. Colin Castleton really isn't like a higher end guy. He has the strength, he has the size to be able to put you in situations like that. Charles Bediako probably played the best defense he could have played. It just goes back to him not being as strong as Castleton. Castleton really worked to get into spots where he was able to score, and really it put Bediako in a bad situation where he was trying not to foul, especially with his length. You want him on the floor, you want him being vertical, you don't want him reaching to block shots and put him out of a good position. So it's really just goes down to being more physical against the guy on the other end of the court. Obviously, it didn't happen in this game, but Bediako has shown in the past that he's been able to, shut down some of these better centers, especially like Oscar Tshiebwe is probably one of the better matchups that Charles Bediako has had this season. So I think there is a recipe for success there. It just didn't happen in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving on to talk about Auburn, we'll talk about Auburn's midweek game, then talk about the Auburn versus Alabama game that happened this past Saturday. But talking about Auburn's midweek game, went to Texas A&M to try and avenge their home blowout loss that they had earlier in January, and lose by 5 on the road to A&M, a score of 83-78. For Auburn, I think they played one of their best offensive games that they've played all year. Shot 37% from three, shot almost 47% from the field, had 4 of their 5 starters in double digits. Led by Wendell Green, who had 20 points. Jani Broome continuing to dominate. He went 8 of 11 from the field, had 18 points and 10 rebounds. And in a game that was decided by 5 points and was tied and the lead was changing back and forth the entire game, the free throw discrepancy was a difference of 25 free throws shot. That's what won the game. Texas A&M played well enough to win, but Auburn played better to win down the stretch. The difference was the free throws. And you can't sit here and blame the officials for the loss of the Tennessee game, because neither team played well enough to win in the Auburn versus Tennessee game. I mean, that game was atrocious. But in this one, Auburn played one of their best performances all year on the road against a team like Texas A&M, who dominated you in Neville Arena, completely flipped the script against somebody like Tyrese Radford, who had 30 points and 9 rebounds in Neville Arena. He had 10 points and only 6 shots in this game. But the difference was the fouls and the free throws. And a lot of it comes down to Auburn wasn't able to defend in the post without fouling. A lot of them were fouls. A lot of them were not. Something's got to change when it comes down to the refs changing the outcome of games and strictly deciding it based off of foul count or free throw count. Because if this game, if the free throw shooting discrepancy is 15 in favor of A&M, Auburn wins this game going away. You just can't have that big of a discrepancy in a game like this that has so much magnitude in a conference like this at this level. What did y'all see?
Yeah, looking back to past years, Alabama last year had went on the road at Arkansas, and I remember there being somewhat of a free throw discrepancy. I think it was like 25 differential. Obviously, this game, I've never seen a team take 40 free throws in a game and not win. So obviously, it's kind of like a gift. And you know, for these games where refs kind of take over, they blow the whistle too much, they, you know, have these hack fouls where you really should just let them play, especially in a game like this where both teams are very competitive, they're going to be physical, they're going to try to get to the rim and score. You can't call a foul on everything, though it's like a foul, because you'll be there all night. And obviously with this game, they didn't really call it fairly, in my opinion. If you're going to give a team like A&M an advantage on the free throw line, then what does that say about Auburn? Did they not drive to the basket enough? Did they not show you enough to get foul calls? I mean, you look at, you know, team personal fouls. Auburn had 27 personal fouls. That's just insane. So it's really sad to see when refs take over games like this.
Yeah, like y'all said, it definitely was sad to see the refs take over a game like this. But Auburn can't win these close games. I think it comes down to the fact that it's don't have that guy. Just continual games where they have a close game and then they just can't close. Looking at their bench, it just no bench production whatsoever. Katie Johnson had 5 points. But I can say it's from blue in the face. I think Alan Flanagan is way better on the bench, coming off the bench, and Chris Moore starting, or even Katie Johnson at this point. I just feel like it fits better. They were winning with Alan Flanagan coming off the bench. So I think Bruce Pearl needs to make a change there. And looking at somebody like Jalen Williams, he has to be more aggressive shooting the ball, especially the way he was shooting in that game, 4-for-8 from the field and 3-for-5 from three. He just has to be more aggressive if they're gonna win basketball games.
Absolutely. So moving on to talk about the big game on Saturday in Neville Arena, obviously College Game Day in town, an electric, electric atmosphere in Auburn and Neville Arena. And Alabama was able to come in and handle it, even after getting punched in the mouth at the beginning, getting down 20-13 at the start, but was able to just prove their depth, prove their bench was better, was considerably better than Auburn's, and just work their way back into the game. And once they took that lead, it was Alabama's game from then on. Some interesting performances, though. Not a great performance from Brandon Miller. Only had 13 points and 6 rebounounds. That's not a terrible game, but 0-for-7 from the 3-point line. Alabama only shot 6-of-21 from the 3, and we've seen them take more threes in the past, and we didn't really see that in this game. I think that is largely a part due to Alan Flanagan and Jalen Williams' defense on Brandon Miller. I think they did a fantastic job with that. But on the other end, Rylan Griffin off the bench, he played 20 minutes, went 5-of-7 from 3, was the leading scorer with 16 points. He was the difference in this game because – Alabama got that guy off the bench to have that production, and Auburn didn't. So when Auburn went away from Wendell Green, went away from Jalen Williams, and at times went away from KD Johnson, it was all Alabama because of Ryland Griffin. And it's an interesting performance for Auburn as well. Again, Auburn played well enough to win in this game, considering their opponent. Alabama is a very, very good team. And, you know, down the stretch, just like you said, Alex, in these close games, just not able to pull them out, not able to be the winner on the other side. But, of course, improvement. I mean, Wendell Green had a great week with 20 points against Texas A&M. He had 24 points against Alabama. Jalen Williams, just like we mentioned, needs to be more aggressive. He had 12 points against Texas A&M and 16 against this Alabama team. I do think he needs to take more of a persistent score role. He needs to be aggressive like Jabari Smith was last year. I know he's not near as good as Jabari Smith, but he needs to find a way to be that guy that we've been begging for Auburn to have all season long. And then on the opposite end, Alan Flanagan, 1-for-9. That's absolutely horrendous. I mean, again, I think that's largely in part due to Brandon Miller's defense on Alan Flanagan. Brandon Miller's really improved his defensive side of his game throughout the season, and that really showed in this game against Alan Flanagan. But you cannot have a guy like Flanagan or a guy like Miller fall apart in a game like this and expect to win at all. What did y'all see in this one?
Yeah, to start off, Neville Wien, it's one of the, you know, hardest places to play. You already knew that the atmosphere was going to be crazy. It's all this pressure and anxiety leading up to the game. You have all week, college game days there, all these different distractions. You come in, you get down early. Auburn, of course, you know, has, you know, great momentum playing at home. It's one of the, you know, craziest arenas people will ever play in. But for Auburn to come out, really punch Alabama in the mouth, be physical, you know, not get down, not kind of take themselves out of the game. They did everything they were supposed to do. Obviously, Bruce Pearl had a great game plan coming into this to take Brandon Miller out. Alan Flanagan was face guarding the entire time. He couldn't do anything. But it really just came down to relying on these X factors off the bench or people you don't really expect to score high volumes. Of course, you already talked about Ryland Griffin coming off the bench for Alabama. He had 16 points. But another guy, Jaden Bradley, came out right out of half and scored Alabama's first 8 points when no one else could really make anything. No one else could get open. He would just drive into the lane and, you know, make crazy layups, get to the foul line, do whatever he could to score. And in those moments, it's where good teams are great teams, because when you don't have your superstar scoring, you had to have other people coming up and offering help. And Alabama has so many guys that can do that. Auburn, in this case, had a guy who can do it. Katie Johnson came off the bench. He had 12 points. But outside of him, no one else could really do anything. Alan Flanagan was hindered the whole time. Brandon Miller played great defense. And ultimately, Wendell Green can't do it all. And, you know, Alabama got the win.
Yeah, for Alabama, Ryland Griffin really carried the load in the first half with Brandon Miller not being able to hit the broadside of a barn for the entire game. And in the second half in crunch time, it felt like Mark Sears just kind of took over the game and sort of iced it for Alabama. But to see Ryland Griffin and Jaden Bradley, who are both freshmen, be ultra aggressive in this type of environment, it is really just motivating for Alabama fans to see that, especially when it comes to tournament time, being in those hostile environments on the road. It will be good to see. And then for Charles Badiaco, the way he guarded Jani Broome, holding him to 8 points, 3-for-11 from the field, was outstanding to see after the lackluster performance against Colin Castleton earlier in the week. But for Auburn, Wendell Green needed some help that game. I mean, he felt like he played the entire first half and almost the entire second half. And when he went out, there was nobody that carried the load. Jalen Williams had to be more aggressive. I think he had 13 points going into half, and then he scored 3 in the second half. I mean, you got to be more aggressive if you want to win these games. And then Katie Johnson, like y'all said, gave him lift off the bench, but it really just wasn't enough for these Auburn Tigers.
Yep, absolutely. So, Nathan, the big game was on Sunday. It was an interesting one. What happened in the NFL in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, in an amazing matchup. This is probably one of the best we've seen in a while. The Eagles coming to play the Chiefs, State Farm Arena in Arizona. Well, it's crazy atmosphere. It feels like everything's been leading up to it. you had so many different distractions. You had the halftime show, of course, everything going around, national anthem, all these different bets, all these people. There's a lot of pressure. The NFL decides they want to, you know, have a brand new field, and they spend $80,000 on it.
No, $800,000.
Yeah, a crazy amount of money. And you have players out there slipping every 2 seconds. But without all that, what a great game for both these teams. Jalen Hurts did everything and beyond to try to get the Eagles the win. It really looked like after the first half where, you know, Patrick Mahomes went down with the injury, like late in the second quarter, where you really thought the Eagles were just going to take over this game. And you have Mahomes come out at halftime and he looks like brand new. I don't know what type of medicine, what type of shots they gave him to just make him a soldier, but he went out there and put the Chiefs over the line, and they win. It's a crazy game to see. But one of the biggest things was with about a minute left, you know, Patrick Mahomes is really just throwing the ball away, and the refs call a holding call on James Bradbury. It was really a iffy call, and I personally don't think that it was holding. What did y'all see? Do you think it was holding? Do you think it was clean?
Yeah, to address that, I think it was holding. I think he was holding Smith Schuster. He even admitted after the game that he was, that being James Bradbury. But the way they were calling that game, there was a similar no call earlier in the game where Bradbury was pulling on him and did kind of the same motion, and the refs didn't throw a flag. So I would have liked to see them call it the same way and either throw a flag at the first time and throw a flag the second time, or throw a flag or don't throw a flag at all either time. They didn't do that, obviously, and it was a big play. Was a big call. I don't like seeing refs take over a game like we saw kind of with Auburn earlier in the week in Texas A&M, and them taking over in the final minute for the Eagles and Chiefs game. But for the Eagles, they dominated time possession in this game and ran more plays, and we're only up 10 at halftime. I think Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense were on the field for about 8 or 9 minutes in the first half. You'd like to see the Eagles be up by more than 10 going into half, but they did have that lead, and I thought, you know, maybe they could just run away with this the way they were playing and the way their defense was shutting down the Chiefs offense. But in the second half, the Eagles defense couldn't stop a parked car. Avante Maddox needed door the Explorer's map because he was absolutely lost on the 2 touchdown plays. I mean, they were in the same exact motion twice. And one time Avante Maddox was on the other side of the field motioning over, and the receiver just started his motion, and he was just absolutely lost. I don't know what he was doing. He absolutely sold this game. I don't know what planet he was on. He obviously wasn't in the Super Bowl in his mind. But for Jalen Hurts, like you said, Nathan, he played lights out. I don't know what else he could have done to win that game. It really just fell back on the defense having zero sacks. And like I said, Avante Maddox being lost. But for the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, I don't know what they gave him at halftime, but they gave him some super soldier serum because he came out there and was just throwing absolute dots. He was running like he didn't have any problems. So, you know, Patrick Mahomes cementing himself as probably one of the best quarterbacks of all time with this win and Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I can address anything other than what Alex just said, because you said it perfectly. In this game for the Eagles, you played well enough to win. I think I absolutely agree with Alex. At the halftime, the 10-point lead just didn't seem enough for the way that they were playing. And again, it just came down to Andy Reid and that Chiefs offense being unstoppable in the second half. They scored on every single possession in the second half for the Chiefs. Just like Alex said, Patrick Mahomes was absolutely perfect in that second half, as a lot like Jalen Hurts was in the first half. But in general, I mean, these two quarterbacks, these were the two best quarterbacks in the league this year, and it was a great matchup to see. And for the future, of both of these teams, for the Eagles, obviously you lost Sketchen, but you have a lot of young talent, especially a receiver, and Jalen Hurts is the guy. I think moving forward for the Eagles, they have a very bright future ahead of them. But on the other side for the Chiefs, I think they're on the middle or the beginning part of what could be a dynasty in the NFL, winning 2 of the last 4 Super Bowls. Patrick Mahomes playing like he does, if he stays at a injury trouble like we've seen him have. He's had some injury trouble. But if he stays out of that, I think they could really, really be amazing. I mean, winning a Super Bowl MVP and the Super Bowl MVP after losing your best receiver like Tyreek Hill in a season like this, it's unbelievable and super impressive. He, I 100% agree with Alex that he has implemented himself as one of the better quarterbacks of all time.
So what did you think of the halftime show?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up because honestly, I thought it was really good.
It was great. It was great.
I'm a huge fan of Rihanna's music. So
yes, 100%. It was absolutely amazing. Of course, immediately we all knew that she was pregnant with her second child because of the outfit and the quote unquote special guest that everybody was expecting. Even though, you know, but I really enjoyed the halftime show. I think it was really well put together. It's amazing to see. I think it was the second best musical performance of the night. Second Alex. Only to Chris Stapleton's national anthem, the best one great. Since.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that one.
Alex, what were your thoughts on the halftime show?
I honestly was kind of expecting more from Rihanna, obviously not knowing she was pregnant. So knowing she was pregnant afterwards and seeing it, I was really excited to see what she was able to do. And those platforms looked awesome, even though there's kind of memes afterwards. But the way they were constructed and how they were done was awesome. The songs were amazing. I wish she would have brought out a special guest like Jay-Z or Drake because they sang some of the songs she has with him.
What about Kanye?
No,
all the lights.
I don't think the NFL would allow that. But honestly, overall, it was one of the better halftime performances I've ever seen. I don't think anything's going to beat Katy Perry and Left Shark, but it was really good.
Yeah. Did y'all see any Super Bowl commercials that really caught your eye? Anything interesting like that?
Well, the one Tubi that caught one. Everybody's eyes was the Tubi one. Everybody started looking for the remote, like what is happening? And you started looking at each other like who on the earth is turning on a movie right now? But I mean, that's definitely the one that caught everybody's eye.
Yeah, I think it definitely started some fights throughout the family, whoever was in the room, wondering what they were doing with the remote. You know, me just sitting there watching it, I was kind of confused for a minute, but I think I kind of caught back up with the point.
Yeah, how do y'all think the commentators did with Greg Olsen and Kevin Burkhardt?
I liked it. Yeah, I like the change. Yeah, it was very good. I think the Super Bowl being Joe Buck's game is kind of weird. I think that's more of a college thing. I think, obviously, you know, this will be Jim Nantz's last Final Four. But when I think of a commentator announcing the Final Four, I think of Jim Nantz. I think that's much more of a college thing. I like the way that they did the variety with Greg Olsen and that crew for Fox in this Super Bowl. I think changing it up every year, a lot like the scoreboard or the graphics that they did, I think that'll help make the Super Bowl a different thing than the NFL regular season or even the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a really big honor to be able to announce the Super Bowl. So, you know, for there to be change every year, see new announcers, you know, kind of have their kind of take on how to call the game. I think that's going to be kind of cool to see. And of course, like the new scoreboard and everything like that, that's always cool to see. I think one of the things that many people thought about this game was, you know, after the Chiefs had won, everyone who bets on, you know, what color is the Gatorade, they didn't show it until like way after everyone was in a tizzy about it. I think it was like purple or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Super Bowl is like probably one of the most bet on games in the year. You have stuff like how long the national anthem is going to be, or who's going to win the coin toss, it just random stuff like that. And I think it's pretty interesting to see kind of that, you know, American kind of capitalist takeover of a very marketable game like this.
Yeah, I feel like Greg Olsen and Kevin Burkhardt did an amazing job. I think Greg Olsen's probably the best player turned commentator in the past probably decade or so. Tony Romo, I've gotten tired of him a lot. But Greg Olsen, it's going to be sad to see him being replaced by Tom Brady. Not next season, but the season after in 2024. I feel like Greg Olsen is far and away the best one out there. But the way they're paying Tom Brady all that money, I don't think they have a choice. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Greg Olsen. And if he, you know, tries to get out of that contract and go be the number one man somewhere else on another team.
You sure you're not giving them that Panthers bias, Alex?
No, he really is good. He's like a thousand. No,
I'm not going to disagree. He is really, really good. Yeah, but like what you said, like with Tom Brady coming in, not next year, but the year after, how do you think he's going to do in a situation like that? Obviously, you have some like weird people coming in, Gronk, Sean Payton. You have all these different experiences with, you know, people that you're used to see playing or coaching or calling games or stuff like that. But for someone like Tom Brady, how do you think he's going to do?
I think he'll do well. I think the way he's taking the year off to kind of just study and learn what he's doing, I think it's really good for him. I just hope he's better than Tony Romo. I mean, that's kind of the bottom of the barrel there. We're looking at something like that. But if he's anything close to Greg Olson, I'll be pleased with it.
Yeah. I like Tom Brady coming into the booth. Just like you said, Nathan, I like the year off. I think that'll be really, really good for him, especially considering the kind of money that is on the line on this contract. Considering he'll make more money in this 10-year contract with Fox than he made in all of his years playing quarterback, which is nuts. But just like Alex said, this is a Tony Romo situation. He's just got to bring the experience that he had on the field into the broadcasting booth and make the fan understand what's going through the quarterback's mind. And that's what Tony Romo was able to do in the first part. Now he's kind of getting a little weird with it, especially this past year, but I hope Tom Brady comes in and brings a whole new light to that.
All right, that's all the time.
He's been very confused. Sorry about that.
All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.